Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. We're opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, June 21st. We have only one item on our agenda for today's meeting at 1 o'clock, which we delayed to 1:30. Before we do that, could we please have a roll call for attendance?
Representative Levy.
Levy present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is present by video.
Representative Smith.
Excused, and we do expect him.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. And would you please return to Rep. Smith? I believe he's in the room now.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Representative Smith is present by video.
Thank you. The one item on our agenda today is a public hearing and possible work session. So I'm opening the public hearing on Senate Bill 139A. LRO.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, Senate Bill 139A, this is a bill relating to Oregon's reduced income tax rate policy available to certain taxpayers. These are going to be business-owning taxpayers that materially participate in a pass-through business. So these are partnerships, S-corps, and sole proprietor businesses. And this may sound familiar, as the committee heard as part of the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures an informational meeting on what would become the contents of Senate Bill 139. But the Joint Committee heard this back on June 4th. But Senate Bill 139A, again, is making changes to the existing program that's available, the reduced rates program. And the changes contained in the bill, again, just as a brief background on what the reduced rates are that exist in their current law. But right now, Oregon has reduced personal income tax rates that are available to business owners that are receiving pass-through income. And so pass-through income is reflective of the profits of these pass-through entities, again, partnerships, S-corps, sole proprietors. When these, they're referred to as pass-through entities, as they pass through their income, they pass through the profit from the business entity to the individual owners, and those owners then report that income on their personal income tax returns. And that's where, when the owners report this on their personal income tax returns, they can elect to utilize these reduced rates that are available here in Oregon on that pass-through income. So the changes in Senate Bill 139, you can maybe think of it in two buckets, where there are changes related to the businesses and then some changes related to the business owners when they receive that income as pass-through. But the new changes relate to, I'll start with the changes on the businesses and how they would qualify for, to be qualifying businesses for these reduced rates. And the first change keys off of what's referred to as ordinary business income, but it is generally referred to as profit. So the profit of the business. So for businesses that have a profit exceeding $5 million, they will no longer be able to pass through their income and have that income receive reduced rates. So they are no longer allowed to continue to participate in the program. So that's change number one. The second group of changes has to do with partnerships and S-corps. And I should say right up front, sole proprietorships are not subject to the changes made in Senate Bill 139. Sole proprietorships will continue qualifying to the program as under current law. But so the second set of changes for S-corps and partnerships relate to the number of employees that the business entity has to employ as a ratio to the number of owners. And the way that 139 is designed is, as a business becomes more profitable, that business is required to employ a greater number of employees as a ratio to the number of owners of that business. And so those are contained in statute, but it's based upon, that's the general idea, is as you become more profitable, you fall into a different categorization bucket of your requirement of number of employees that the business entity has to meet. Now, if a business entity does not meet those employer or owner ratios, they can continue to qualify for the program if they do meet a reinvestment requirement. So this is a requirement more or less of the business to reinvest 75% of their profits back into the business. And if they do that, they can continue to qualify for the program if they meet the existing law requirements as well. And then the last set of changes here, those are the qualification requirements for the business entity. A secondary group of changes relate to the income tax rates that are available when the income is passed through. So the income tax rates on those personal income tax returns, there are two changes being made, two reductions for these existing law rates. So there's a series of rates right now, they're marginal rates. So there is slight reductions, the 7.2% bracket will be widened and will be combined with the 7% bracket. So those business entities that are passing through income and received by taxpayers for that $250,000 to $500,000, they could benefit by a reduced rate going from 7.2%, that'll now be 7% under Senate 139. And the second change has to do with the third rate and bracket, which is right now at 7.6% for income 500,000 to a million, that'll go from 7.6% to 7.5%. So there's really two groups of changes here where you have additional requirements on the business entity to qualify for the program. And there are some rate changes, rate reductions for those taxpayers that continue to qualify for the program with the new changes being made. And again, this falls in line with what the committee heard in the informational meeting back on June 4th. One change that was made since then on the Senate side was, in addition to the sole proprietors not being affected by the new proposed changes in 139, S-corps and partnerships with profit, that ordinary business income or profit less than $250,000, they will also not be subject to the new proposals in 139. So you can think of sole proprietorships and these smaller or less profitable businesses under $250,000 continue to qualify under the existing law, but they don't have these additional requirements going forward in Senate Bill 139. We do have the paperwork, Madam Chair. It is, you can see the revenue impact is expected to be about $30 million revenue lift going forward. There is, you'll see the timing of how that works in the first biennia. There is some shifting of the timing due to when taxpayers file their returns, but it is expected to largely be about $30 million per year, $60 million per biennia. And then we do have the fiscal paperwork loaded in all this as well.
Thank you, Mr. Easton. Committee, questions for Mr. Easton? And I do have a few, depending on the questions that we see popping up now. Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Easton, thank you for that explanation. So just so I can get my head around this, can you describe to me what would happen for a business that's an S-corp or a partnership that makes $250,000 or less in profit? So is there any change for them, any benefit out of Senate Bill 139?
Representative Reschke, the $250,000, they will be, there's no new requirement, so they would continue to qualify under the existing, so it's not more stringent. The first rate reduction occurs at that income above $250,000. So if you're still under that $250,000 going forward, there'd more or less be no change for the program for those businesses.
And a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Sure.
Thank you. Do we have I think you've provided in the past, and you don't have to do it right now, but I'd like to see a breakdown of where businesses fall. And so how many businesses are earning under 250? How many fall in each one of these brackets or marginal tax rates is what I'm looking for. So I'm trying to figure out who's affected and who's not, if we have such data available.
It's not posted in OLSBS. Yes, we can definitely, we'll be sure to circulate that to the committee. Yeah.
Okay, because my thought is that most small businesses are under the $250,000 profit range. And so this isn't going to, it's not going to benefit them or it's not going to hurt them, but it's just going to be the same. It's happening at the higher end. So I have a few more questions, but I'll let somebody else chime in and circle back around. Thank you.
I'm not, let's see, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair and colleagues. I apologize for the background noise. I can't control that. I have a 101 question. Kyle, can you help me understand single member LLCs, where they fall in this? Are they considered sole proprietors or are they considered part of the S-corp group?
Yeah, Representative Smith, for the single member LLC, I think it's in some case up to them on how they're going to report. They could definitely show up as a sole proprietor. I think in some cases, there's even an option to be on the C Corp side of things, but that wouldn't pertain to the reduced rates. So I would think most of them would show up as a sole proprietor in this case for a single member LLC.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that clarification, as I'm sure how that was viewed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure. Mr. Easton, I've got a few questions I want to ask. One is, there is a revenue impact. You described it as a revenue lift. As I understand the development of this proposal, it was not designed as a revenue gain. It was designed to make some adjustments to a policy that was adopted a few years ago, and it was felt like the policy wasn't quite in line with the original intent. Could you tell us what that original intent was, and also what the thought was behind, the objective, if the original objective was about supporting or creating jobs, how that relates to how this proposal is designed?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I think you hit it right on what the original policy purpose of it was, to try to encourage job development, business development. And this was part of the 2013 special session when this was enacted. And the discussion that we've had that occurred on the Senate side was definitely, as you just laid out, Madam Chair, in that this is an existing tax expenditure or a tax benefit. But the requirement really right now is the same for every business entity, whether they qualify or not. And that's one employee and then the 1,200 aggregate hours requirement. So they all have to meet that same requirement, which is really could be as simply as just one employee, whether you're at 200,000 in profit or 2 million in profit. So the changes in the bill are, I think, with that underlying intent, and we include that in the policy purpose of the revenue impact statement, which is reflective of the conversations that happened on the Senate side, of trying to tailor the program to encourage or reward or tailor the benefit towards those businesses that are either employing a number of employees as a ratio to the owners, so something that ratio goes up as the business becomes more profitable. So that would be an encouragement to continue hiring more individuals as a business becomes profitable. And there's also the secondary qualification, which is if you're reinvesting those profits to a greater extent than 75%, you could continue to qualify as well, because that's a reflection of reinvestment in the business, where this tax break could benefit that reinvestment as well.
Okay, thank you. And there's a technical term. Sometimes we joke about, oh, it's a technical term, but this one really is. The term is material participation, and it's explained in the statute that it has the meaning given in Section 469 of the Internal Revenue Code. But for the purpose of our public hearing, before we start with our witnesses, could you please just give us a little a more clear idea of what that means to materially participate?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think the idea is to focus on those business owners that are active in the business. So they're not just a passive investor. So they didn't invest money and then that's it. They'll just hopefully receive benefit from that investment, but they're active in the business itself. So maybe they're active in the operations, they're employed in the business, they're the owner, the director, something on those lines, where they're not just a passive investor.
Got it. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee before we go to our witnesses who are signed up? Rep. Smith, do you have another question? And Rep. Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, can you help me work through the following scenario? And I'm sorry I didn't get this to you earlier, but let's say you have a pass-through entity that makes a profit of $6 million with six owners, and each owner gets $1 million passed through on their personal income tax. How does that work today, and how would that work under Senate Bill 139?
Representative Reschke, so under Senate Bill 139, the $5 million profit limitation is focused on that business entity. So in that case, that $6 million is a million above the $5 million limit. So that business would no longer qualify. So that income that gets passed through can no longer be used against the reduced rates. And under current law, in your example, each of those owners would have $1 million in income. And that $1 million would then each of them would have the opportunity to apply it to the reduced rates on their individual tax return. So that's where a lot of the program is focused right now, just on when that money flows through. The changes in 139 do add those separate layers, I think, in terms of a way to think about it is there's now requirements on the business entity. Do they meet that or not beyond just the one employee that's under existing law? So that is one of the key changes here to your example, yeah.
Thank you.
We're now ready to move to public testimony. For those of you who have signed up to testify, I recognize the names and you're pretty familiar with, we appreciate that you keep your camera off and microphone off until you're called on to testify. And we also appreciate if you can keep your comments to around 3 minutes or so each. We certainly have time to hear from everybody who's signed up to testify today. I will call a couple of names first so that you can be ready and then let you know who else is in the list. John Calhoun will be first, followed by Daniel Hauser. After that, we will hear from Scott Bruin and Anthony Smith. So, Mr. Calhoun first, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham and Vice Chair Rushkey, and members of the committee. My name is John Calhoun, and I'm here today representing Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who support a rational, equitable tax code. We urge this committee to support SB 139A. Let's be clear, however, Tax Fairness Oregon has always opposed a preferential tax treatment for business owners. We testified to that position earlier this year. Almost all the benefits go to higher income individuals, so it worsens an already unfair distribution of wealth and income. It's another version of trickle-down economics. Based upon my experience as a business investor, managing partner, and CEO of multiple businesses, I can say with confidence that the lower tax rates for business owners in our existing law provide no economic benefits to the state and are simply a transfer of wealth to the already privileged. Saving 1-2% of profits does not provide enough incentive to change any behavior other than applying for the lower rates. In spite of these objections, we support the bipartisan proposals before you today. They eliminate the most egregious aspects of this policy, and the employment and investment criteria are intelligently crafted. They require either more employment as profits increase or investments to get the benefit. The point of these changes is to encourage the original claimed intent of the pass-through rates, business and employment growth in Oregon. The business lobby will say that this reform will damage small businesses already hurting from the COVID recession. And there's no reason to reduce tax expenditures in this budget cycle. First, what most people consider small businesses will actually pay the same or lower taxes. Second, this is an income tax. Business owners that lost money due to the recession won't pay any tax. Third, the lobby will never say that there is an appropriate time to minimize any tax expenditure. I would remind them what Senator Boqvist, one of the authors of the bill, said in response to the charge that we don't need the revenue. Yeah, but we don't need to waste revenue either. We do want to point out that if this bill becomes law, tax accountants will do their best to work around the limitations. Wealthier companies may create multiple corporate entities to ensure that they fit within the limits. We hope LRO studies how businesses respond and if businesses are successful at gaming the system, and if so, future legislatures should address those actions. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. And please stick around in case there are any questions at some point from the committee. Next is Daniel Hauser. After that will be Scott Bruin.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Rushkey, and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Hauser. I am the tax policy analyst for the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and I respectfully submit this testimony in support of Senate Bill 139A on behalf of the center. The paths to reduce tax rates currently in law are fundamentally flawed and inequitable, and they should be eliminated. However, this bill is a modest improvement that makes the policy less generous to the very richest business owners and provides additional sideboards to this tax break. The current policy sends about 2/3 of the tax break to business owners with profits more than $500,000 each year. Their employees do not receive this generous tax break. And unfortunately, Senate Bill 139 does not remedy these structural inequities. However, it does prevent some of the very richest business owners from taking this tax break on their profits, saving the state tens of millions of dollars every year that could be reinvested in services for low-income Oregonians or business owners who are truly struggling to stay afloat, like those that the speaker before me, Mr. Calhoun, noted aren't paying income taxes at all because they lost money in the last year. This is a modest improvement, but an improvement nonetheless, and leads OCPP to support this amendment. Senate Bill 139A does make an already complicated policy even more complex. With complexity comes opportunities for savvy taxpayers to game the system through restructuring businesses and other avoidance techniques. To ensure this legislation doesn't create new problems and to assess the effectiveness of the reform, the Legislative Revenue Office should be directed to study the policy and report back during the 23 legislative session to the House and Senate Revenue Committees. The evaluation should assess the racial and ethnic distribution of the tax policy and the beneficiaries of the tax policy, examine how taxpayers are adjusting incorporation statuses to take advantage of any reforms, and reevaluate the revenue impact. Reduced tax rates on pass-through profits is an inherently inequitable policy that should be eliminated. However, scaling it back, as this bill does, is a positive move in the right direction, and I'd urge you to support and please pass Senate Bill 139. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I don't see any questions from the committee yet for either of the first two witnesses, but I invite you to stick around just in case. Scott Bruin.
Okay, well, thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you so much. My name is Scott Bruin, and I am the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy for Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a member-led business trade association with over 1,600 members that employ more than 300,000 Oregonians. I'm testifying today in opposition to Senate Bill 139A. OBI opposes this bill because it would raise taxes on thousands of Oregon partnership businesses at a time when many of those businesses are still gathering themselves, from the economic impacts and uncertainty of COVID. The diverse businesses that would see those tax increases are in every corner of our state and engage in just about every commercial business activity that you can think of, although this bill looks like it will have the greatest adverse impact on professional, medical, dental, and creative service firms. These businesses, whether they have 5 employees or 50, each have an interest in growing and keeping those employees working. Senate Bill 139A will make it harder for those businesses to do that. We think it's also important to note that given the incredibly positive revenue position that we are in, the state does not need the additional revenues raised by this bill. The monies that would be raised by this bill mean very little in terms of a massive forecasted surplus and a state budget approaching $30 billion, but it does mean quite a bit to the businesses that would have to pay it. In fact, it may mean everything to them as they consider whether to hire or expand or to even stay in Oregon. Madam Chair, committee, in that vein, I had a small business person reach out to me via email even just this morning. That business person made a succinct case to me, which I believe bears repeating. And in part, they wrote, Senate Bill 139 imposes strict requirements that my small business cannot meet and will effectively prevent my small business from expanding. I believe this to be true for many small businesses in Oregon. And Madam Chair, I just want to make one clarifying point to a point that was made by one of the earlier testifiers. That person said that this tax increase was fairly trivial because I think they said it only increased the tax 1 to 2%. Well, let's be very clear. It doesn't raise it 1 to 2%. It raises it 1 to 2 percentage points, and there's a big difference. 1 to 2 percentage points is effectively a 14 to a 28% tax increase. So that is a significant tax increase. And for that reason, Madam Chair, committee, I just urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 139. Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Next is Anthony Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chairs, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anthony Smith. I'm the Oregon State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business, representing thousands of small businesses across the state, many being the smallest of small businesses, with about 90% of our members in Oregon having fewer than 25 employees and 70% having fewer than 10 employees. NFIB is opposed to Senate Bill 139A because this proposal significantly restricts eligibility for Oregon's pass-through entity tax rates policy, while at the same time unnecessarily raising revenue. Unlike other approaches, which could reform the policy to achieve certain revenue-neutral policy goals, Senate Bill 139 simply raises revenue without a specific policy objective to justify the tax increase and provides zero tax relief for small businesses with the most modest levels of income. As a little bit of background, the small business PTE tax rates were part of the grand bargain in the 2013 special session. The package of bills passed during that special session included House Bill 3601, which, among other provisions that raised revenue overall, created new tax rates for taxpayers with PTE business income, meeting certain criteria, namely those with at least one full-time employee and those whose owners actively participate in the day-to-day operations of their businesses. The policy objective was to provide a more favorable rate structure for these businesses. As a reminder, Oregon has already disconnected from federal PTE policy. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 used a tax parity lens to make sure that both C-Corps and pass-through entities benefited as equally as possible from the tax cuts. C-Corps saw their corporate income tax rates reduced from 35% to 21%, and pass-through businesses were able to apply a new 20% deduction on their qualifying business income to reduce their federal tax liability. During the 2018 regular session, the Oregon legislature passed Senate Bill 1528, which required an add-back of that federal deduction as Oregon taxable income, primarily because the state already had its own pass-through entity tax policy, which is what we're discussing today. The governor then called a special session to pass House Bill 4301, which expanded Oregon's pass-through entity rates to sole proprietorships and single-member LLCs, and that was a group that were left out of the original legislation. But the net result is that while Oregon's PTE policy now benefits around 25,000 businesses, hundreds of thousands of businesses missed out on the tax savings that they would have received on their Oregon income taxes had the state remained connected to the federal 20% pass-through deduction. Now, I'd like to acknowledge that while Senate Bill 139A broadens the lowest PTE rate of 7% to income of up to $500,000 and provides a slight rate decrease from 7.6% to 7.5% for income between $500,000 and $1 million, Oregon's smallest businesses with less than $250,000 in ordinary business income will see no benefit from the proposed changes in this policy. And businesses with more than $5 million in income would be prohibited from opting into the program retroactively starting January 1, 2021. I heard the timer go off. Madam Chair, I have additional testimony that you can find on OLIS from 30 business organizations that have signed on to that. I'll send in my own testimony as well and be happy to answer any questions. We urge the committee to oppose Senate Bill 139A.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And if there was just one final point that you couldn't get in, like just a sentence or two, you could go ahead and tell us now, but we will take a look at the written testimony that is submitted.
Madam Chair, I'll take you up on that. I just want to address the tax expenditure perspective for just one second. This tax policy has actually performed pretty much exactly as it was intended when it was first contemplated in the 2013 special session. In the five tax years that the PTE rate structure has been in place, the revenue impact to the state has come in at or under projections each year. The number of taxpayers utilizing the rate structure has been relatively stable year over year, and the sideboards that were part of the original legislation have never been triggered, and I don't think that they're on track to be triggered. So just wanted to point that out for the record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the additional comment and keeping it succinct. Much appreciated. Let's see. Committee members, any questions for the people who've been testifying this afternoon? I don't see any hands. And I want to confirm with LRO, does that complete our list of witnesses?
Yes, it does, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could ask Mr. Smith a question real quick, and that is, of NFIB members, what's the ratio of folks that earn $250,000 or profit $250,000 or less? Is that like 80% of your membership, 50% of your membership, 20%? Where are those folks?
Madam Chair, Representative Reschke, thank you for the question. That's not an easy question to answer. I don't know that. I think maybe LRO might have a better idea of what generally small businesses, pay in taxes and what their income levels are, since they get to see kind of all that data. You know, we survey our members and we kind of think we have an idea of where they are in the income range. I know that the U.S. Small Business Administration puts out a statistic every year that talks about the median of business income, actually income from all sources for business owners, and that median income range is somewhere around $50,000 a year, which is comparable to the U.S. average. Certainly, some other states that are close to us have higher medians, and a few have lower medians. But generally, businesses, at least the ones that we represent, are generally pretty modest income levels. And that's kind of the struggle that I have with this bill is, there's a price tag of $30 million a year in revenue increase, but there's really no benefit whatsoever to the smallest of small businesses.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the witnesses? I don't see any. So I'm going to confirm with Mr. Easton that the process is closing the public hearing, but I think we are ready for a work session. So I would close the public hearing and then open a work session immediately following. That's what I intend to do. I'm getting a head nod. Okay. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 139. And I'm opening a work session for Senate Bill 139. I'd like to ask a couple of clarifying things from Mr. Easton, or just to reaffirm what I think I heard in your explanation and the way I'm reading this bill. There is one of the components of this is there is actually a reduced tax rate, a small reduction in the rate. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. There's multiple tax rates and brackets, but this would be making a change for the income that's $250,000 to $500,000. That would have a reduction from 7.2% to 7%, which is the lowest rate possible right now. And then the next bracket, which is income of $500,000 to $1 million, that's at 7.6% today, and that would go to 7.5%. So anyone, any taxpayer that has pass-through income exceeding $250,000 would potentially benefit from the reduction of those rates because they are marginal rates. So if you are receiving $2 million in pass-through income, you would receive the benefit of those rates as well on your first $1 million in income.
Thank you. There was also an interesting point, the last question that was raised during the public hearing. It was asking for information on how many businesses, as a member of an organization, but it could be just even made more general, how many businesses have a certain amount of profit. And one of the things that I think is interesting about this, and for us to keep in mind, it's not about the sales of a business, their sales or the amount they're invoicing or their revenue. It's about their profit. not about their total business sales. And they could have 2 million or 5 million of sales, for example, but a profit of only $250,000. That would not be unusual, especially when we hear about low margin businesses.
Yes, Madam Chair, just a note on the distribution as that came up in the previous discussion. For the of the roughly 20,000 or so businesses that are qualifying for the reduced rates today, about 15,000 of those are under 250,000 in profit for the S-Corps and partnership. So numerically speaking, the vast majority fall under that 250,000 and therefore not subject to the new requirements. From a revenue standpoint, where we think the revenue lift will come from is predominantly going to come from those higher income businesses, especially above that $5 million in profit, as they account for a greater share of the reduced rate income to begin with. So you can affect a small number, relatively small number of the businesses, but get a higher amount of that income in terms of the revenue, positive revenue impact.
Thank you. So, committee members, this is our time in a work session to just have committee discussion. And if I don't see hands go up in another few seconds, I will ask for a motion so we at least have something to discuss. Rep. Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to say I appreciated the testimony, all the testimony today, but in particular, folks raising the disproportionate benefit that this tax expenditure goes to the wealthiest Oregonians, where $7 and $10 from this tax break go to folks making over $500,000, and this is in a single year, and less than 1 in 10 goes to people making under 200,000. You know, in this year right now, where so many workers are struggling and still recovering, it doesn't strike me as very fair or equitable to have these pass-through businesses pay a lower tax rate on their profits than their employees are paying on their wages. And even unemployed workers have to pay a 9% rate on their unemployment income. And so I think that it does seem appropriate for the state legislature to reform these preferential rates just to make sure that we're actually meeting the original intent of the law. So, I would just say that I support this this bill, Senate Bill 139, because I think while of course it's fairly modest in its reforms and I wish it could go further, I do think that at least it's targeting the support to make sure that businesses can actually encourage the smaller businesses that are trying to grow or trying to invest in their businesses while making sure that we're not giving away these benefits to businesses that are over that are already very profitable, making over $5 million in profit alone, not even sales. So, I think I'll leave it at that for now.
Thank you. Representative Pham mentioned the original intent. The intent was about job creation. We did have some testimony a few minutes ago about meeting the original design. The testimony, it seemed, was more related to the revenue impact, that the revenue impact was working out about as expected. You know, we hadn't been far off target. But what testimony or what information came up during the work in the Senate about meeting the intent regarding job creation? Has it not particularly made much difference in job creation, or did it actually end up encouraging a lot of job creation because of the way this tax benefit was structured?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think in the discussion on the Senate side, part of the discussion was definitely on the fact that the design of the program, it only requires that one employee. So it's really not even designed to, after you have that one employee, there's no more benefit you receive by hiring that second employee. So while the tax benefit to the business owner puts more money in their pocket, certainly, the design of the program doesn't incentivize any further hiring. And that was part of the rationale for the changes, is as that profit increases, it sets the bar higher in terms of the number of employees to your owner ratio that you have to meet. So it changes the design of the program to incentivize or at least require businesses to employ more individuals to continue receiving the benefit going forward.
Okay, I'm going to paraphrase and make it much shorter. You could have just one employee and one employee forever and not really try to grow the business and still get the benefit.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay. I'm going to look for more hands. Rep Pham?
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I think when we think about the intent of the law, I do want to support the calls for us to continue to study this through the LRO to ensure that we are meeting the intent of the law, to make sure that we're supporting small businesses who are reinvesting in their businesses and employing people in their communities. And I do think it's important to make sure that we're doing some regular evaluation.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment on a few of the things. One was, we heard in testimony that this is going to prevent small business expansion. I can see business owners actually not growing above $5 million to stay within the sweet spot, which would be bad for Oregon. Second of all, the fact that we're not helping the smallest of the small businesses who were hit disproportionately by COVID and government lockdowns is somewhat frustrating as well. And finally, I just say that this was part of the grand bargain back in 2013, and there's only two members on our committee who were here when that grand bargain was struck. That was the chair and Representative Smith. And in that grand bargain, there were several pieces put together. This was just one of them. And what is concerning is that we're only working on this policy. We're not looking at the broad package that was passed altogether. And so I'm going to be a no vote on this.
Thank you, Representative Reschke. Any other questions or discussion? And I'm not seeing any hands. Rep. Pham, would you be prepared to make a motion?
Yes, Chair Nathanson. I move Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Pham moves Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Now we have something in front of us. Any other discussion? Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. Colleagues, the famous, or maybe a better phrased as infamous, 2013 grand bargain did in fact precede nearly all of us. And so we're sitting here 8 years later trying to remember or reconstruct what the intention of the legislation was that brought us the current pass through. My understanding from everything that I've heard is that it was really about supporting small business and about the importance of supporting small business as a vector to the larger economy. So the importance of small businesses in creating jobs or supporting the small businesses as they make reinvestment in their businesses and take on expansion and support employees, that makes a lot of sense to me. Unfortunately, and this probably happens when you try to do something like a grand bargain, the legislation that was passed then, I think in retrospect, is lacking some of the sideboards that we would want to have if the pass-through is really achieving those goals of jobs and reinvestment. Frankly, I would probably have drawn a change to the pass-through even a little tighter than what we've got in Senate Bill 139. But I think Senate Bill 139 does make a good effort to really get at what we're trying to spur here. The requirement that a business have actual full-time jobs for people is one thing, or alternatively, that they reinvest 75% of proceeds back into the business. That's exactly what the small business advocates are asking for us, is to give some support for reinvestment and expansion. And I think the bill does that by really providing a benefit to reinvestment that's made by small business owners. So these are important sideboards. I think it's only, it's almost always the case, or certainly frequently the case, that we look back on legislative efforts that were made in years past and realize that there are ways to improve those efforts, or with the passing of time, to make them more effective in their original intent. And I think that's what we're achieving in Senate Bill 139, and I will support it.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. Any other comments? Representative Rushkey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a final comment would be the idea of jobs and growing jobs. There's probably a fundamental difference between members on this committee. And in my view, the best way to create jobs is to keep money in the hands of businesses, not to bring it into the government and then try to create jobs that way. So just another reason I'll be a no. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Marsh, do you? Okay. I don't see any other hands. I think we're ready for a vote. The motion that's before us is to move Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Let's have a roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes no.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
So I will be a no vote. However, Madam Chair, if you need a courtesy later, just please let me know.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes yes.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes no.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. This is going to the floor. I will assign a carrier by the end of the day. Is there any other business before I close this work session? Mr. Easton, I think we've concluded it. Okay, I am closing the work session on Senate Bill 139. Is there any other business, Mr. Easton, or any announcements from you?
That covers your agenda for today, Madam Chair.
Okay. Committee, stay tuned. We don't know when and if our next meeting is, so please watch your email. Anything else? Okay. Thank you all. We're adjourned.